of high pressure building into the plains will mean clearing skies for the region this afternoon. Tomorrow and tomorrow night, a weak cold front will pass through the Great Lakes, bringing scattered showers to Wisconsin and Michigan. Farther south, quiet weather and slightly below average temperatures are expected for the weekend. High temperatures today will reach the 50s across much of the Midwest. Lows tonight will drop into the 30s. The forecast for east central Illinois this afternoon becoming partly sunny, the high 55. The wind from the north at 10 to 15 miles per hour with gusts to 20 miles per hour. Tonight partly cloudy with a low of 35 and a light east wind. Tomorrow, Friday, mostly sunny, the high 58. The wind will be out of the southwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Friday night, partly cloudy, we'll see a low of 34. The wind from the west at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Saturday, sunny. Look for a high in the mid-50s with a west wind from 5 to 10 miles per hour. Saturday night, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-30s. Sunday, partly sunny with a high in the upper 50s. Sunday night and Monday, partly cloudy. We'll see a low Sunday night in the upper 30s and a high Monday in the upper 50s. Monday night, mostly clear with a low in the upper 30s. At noon central time, temperatures across Illinois and Indiana in a narrow range from the upper 40s to the low 50s. There was a mix of clouds and sun. Rockford reported 50 degrees. It was 49 at O'Hare, 51 at Bloomington. Mattoon reported 50 degrees. It was 49 degrees at Carbondale, 48 at South Bend and Lafayette. Indianapolis checked in with 47 degrees and Terre Haute reported 50. At Willard Airport at the top of the hour, a partly sunny sky, 50 degrees, the dew point 38, the relative humidity 63%, the wind out of the north at 12 with gusts to 20, the barometric pressure 30.03 and steady. And at 12:39, 48 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois, the sky is mostly cloudy. Jim Meadows joins us now to talk with the biographer of the woman who commissioned and then lived in one of Frank Lloyd Wright's most distinctive homes, the Dana Thomas House in Springfield. Jim?
Good afternoon, Celeste. And our guest this afternoon is Roberta Volkman, who has quite a bit of history with the Dana Thomas House herself. Good afternoon, Roberta.
Good afternoon, Jim.
And I understand you've been an interpreter at the Dana Thomas House. You've been president of the Dana Thomas House Foundation Board as well.
That's correct. And lots of other committees on the board. Yes, I have been involved for over 20 years.
So you've been inside the Dana Thomas House. This is a house that was designed by Frank Lloyd Wright early in the 20th century. And, I've visited the house, but it's really hard to imagine what it's like to live there. With the time you've spent there, can you imagine what living in that house would be like?
No, I can't. It's a showcase. It doesn't have a home feeling. And that's unlike many of the other homes that he built. He planned it to be a place for her to entertain, to exhibit her collection of art. And, of course, there are performance spaces, actually, in it. So it isn't, as you say, it isn't a homey place, but it's certainly an elegant place.
Well, Roberta Volkman is the author of a biography of the woman who commissioned the Dana Thomas House, and that is Susan Lawrence, or Susan Lawrence Dana, I guess, would be the particular name in this case. She was a wealthy widow at the time when she hired Frank Lloyd Wright to renovate her father's home.
That's correct. And the irony of her life is that you just stumbled on it. She was not just Susan Lawrence. She was born that way. And then she kept changing her names with various husbands. And when the circumstances changed, she changed her name. And so at the point that she was most active in the house, and it was the busiest time, then she was Susan Lawrence Dana, but she became Susan Lawrence Jorgendahl, she became Susan Lawrence Gehrman, and many other names. There are 19 chapters in here, and each one has a different name for her.
Now, in your research on Susan Lawrence, were you able to figure out why she made the decision to hire Frank Lloyd Wright Even now, his designs stand out in a neighborhood. And to do this in the first decade of the 20th century, to say that I'm going to take an already stately home and have it transformed by someone who must have seemed like a radical architect. Why do you think she did it?
Well, there are really two theories, and I'm going to just tell you the one that I'm in favor of. Frank Lloyd Wright at the time was promoting strongly his style of architecture, which came to be known as the Prairie style of architecture. He was giving lectures. He had published an article in the popular press, the Ladies' Home Journal. He had exhibits at the Chicago Architectural Society. He was building all over the Chicago area in this new style. Susan Lawrence went up there frequently to the Chicago area, particularly to Oak Park, where he was doing much of this building. And she, of course, was she was very much an individual, and I suspect that she wanted an avant-garde design, and so she hired him. The other idea that emerges as you investigate this situation is that she was a close friend of his aunt's. His aunts were progressive educators, and she was a very close friend of theirs. And perhaps they promoted their nephew a little bit to her, too. Those are the two theories.
She lived in the house for several years. She certainly entertained there a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Did she like the house?
I think she did. I know she did. I have a copy of a letter in which she had been asked by one of Frank Lloyd Wright's staff members to come and take a photograph, and she didn't feel, this was near the end of the time she was living in the house, she didn't feel that it was up to standards, and she said in the letter to Frank Lloyd Wright that she believed it was his best work, and she's very proud of it, and she didn't want them to take a photograph when it wasn't at its best. So, yes, I think she was very proud of it.
And when we're talking about the house, we're also talking about the interiors of the house and the furniture, which was also a Frank Lloyd Wright's design.
Exactly. This was the first time that when he designed this house in 1902, this was the first time that he coordinated the draperies, the lighting, the furniture. He has two motifs going through the house, the sumac pattern and the butterfly pattern. All of that was coordinated in one building, and he hadn't done that before. She gave him an open checkbook, and therefore he went ahead as he would possibly do, knowing his reputation for spending money.
Now, you know, in your book, I just got the impression that Susan Lawrence really, even though she came from a wealthy family and had many advantages, she had a difficult life in many ways. Her children died at infancy. Her first husband died when he was relatively young. Her second husband, who was much younger than her, died very soon after. And her third husband was something of a scoundrel, but there was some happiness and fulfillment in her life nevertheless.
Yes, but it seemed, you're correct. I felt that as I got deeper into it, that nothing seemed to work well for her. That I have the chapter on when she was worked very hard for the Equal Rights Amendment in Illinois, and it was defeated. She was very rich, though, in close women friends. She had a lot of close friends, and she was extremely loyal and extremely generous to all of those friends. We have much evidence that proves that.
When you mentioned the Equal Rights Amendment, I gather this is the same Equal Rights Amendment which was finally ratified by Congress long after Susan Lawrence's death, although it never gained ratification by enough states to go anywhere.
That's right. That's correct. Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned the friendships that she made. I know she had an interest in spiritualism, mm-hmm. and in what I guess would now be called a New Age religion, and that Essentia she founded became, I guess, the bud of what is now the Unity Church in Springfield.
Correct. She was always looking to something that was different. She was always just slightly outside of the mold of society. And I think that has something to do with her choice of Frank Lloyd Wright as an architect, too. It was different, something that no one else in Springfield had.
Was she a well-known woman in Springfield? Would she have been considered out there, a bit of an eccentric?
I've talked to descendants of people who knew her, and you hit it right on the head. I've heard she was considered extremely eccentric, but she did have, I found out, many friends, and particularly neighbors. Many people interviewed early on after the state of Illinois bought the house. There were a lot of interviews of people who knew her. Of course, those people have now passed on. But if they lived in the neighborhood, they spoke very highly of her. She was because of her generosity and her kindness, which isn't well known often. She's just thought of oftentimes as an eccentric who had this big house and who had these strange religious practices going on.
Well, the Dana Thomas House is not actually open now. It's been closed for renovations, and I understand that it will be open again in December for public viewing.
That's correct.
But the gift shop in the carriage house, the Sumac shop, is open Wednesdays through Fridays from 10 to 3. Is your book there?
It is. That's where I have been selling it primarily. And that would be available also, if people can't make it to Springfield, at sumacshop.com. They have a website where you can order the book, too.
I've also seen it listed on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and through the publisher bookstandpublishing.com.
That's correct.
And Roberta Volkman, I'm sorry we're out of time, but I wanted to thank you for taking these few minutes to talk to us. The book is called Susan Lawrence, The Enigma in the Wright House, by Roberta Volkman, out from a Bookstand Publishing.
Thank you for having me.
You're quite welcome.
And Jim Meadows, thanks for that interview. Very, very nice. Very interesting. I'm going to have to pick up that book. Susan Lawrence. This is The Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn.
Support comes from Meyer Drapery Services. Specializing in custom draperies since 1972, Meyer Drapery offers more than 1 million linear yards of drapery material in their two local wholesale warehouses and retail outlet at 330 North Neal in downtown Champaign. Installation and design services are also available.